You did it.
Right.
Excellent. This is Pauline Lamontagne, and on behalf of Pine Tree Guide Dog users, I'd like to welcome everyone who's on the call to our presentation. And then following the presentation, there will be a board meeting. And I am going to turn the floor over to Jim Kutch to introduce our guest speakers tonight. And we really appreciate their coming. And as Jim indicated, this is being recorded. So if you know of anyone who doesn't have the opportunity to hear the presentation tonight, it will be available. And the floor is yours, Jim. And thank you very much for your technical assistance also.
Oh, you're welcome. KO, can you let that other person in? We have one more in the waiting room. It's my pleasure to introduce two very senior professionals who happen to also be great personal friends of mine from my time working at the Seeing Eye and their time still working at the Seeing Eye. Tonight, we're going to hear from Kristen Opplinger. She, for the last 6 years, has been a guide dog mobility instructor at the Seeing Eye. She has a lot of experience. Before that, she had 7 years experience as an orientation and mobility instructor with the Department of Veterans Affairs. And she was teaching both cane skills and complex orientation skills to veterans. She has a master's degree in O&M, and she really likes combining her O&M degree with her knowledge of guide dogs, both in presentations like this and what she does every day, all the rest of the time at the Seeing Eye. Also presenting tonight is Chelsea White. Chelsea's been an outreach specialist at the Seeing Eye for over 20 years. She is quite the frequent flyer because her job is to go reach out as an outreach specialist. She makes presentations about guide dogs and the Seeing Eyes program all over North America. And over her time with using Seeing Eye dogs, handling, being a handler, she has had 5 Seeing Eye dogs, and she's currently working with Brooke, a German Shepherd. So without further ado, let me turn it over to Kristen and Chelsea. Thank you both.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jim.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. We're so excited to be here. Thank you, all of you, for having us. So this is a presentation that Chelsea and I had done at our 90th reunion. I'm wearing my 90th reunion Seeing Eye shirt, so I'm representing here. And Ginger and Jim had asked us to come and present it to you all. It's basically some tips for orienting to unfamiliar indoor environments. And a lot of what we cover is going to be basic information that, to be honest, all of you are probably doing a really great job of already. But it's always good to review the basics and maybe pick up some other helpful hints that you've forgotten about and could also be using. So with that said, we're gonna start off with our tip number one, and that is stop and listen. You can gain so much about an environment by utilizing the sounds around you whenever possible. You can ascertain the size of a room, for example. Is it really big and cavernous, or is it a little bit narrow? Is it a little bit smaller? Does the sound bounce around a little bit more? You can determine the location of crowds, maybe even the presence of a front desk.
Jim, can you just join the meeting?
Yes. So that is something that I do fairly frequently when I travel. Especially when I'm walking into, say, for example, a new hotel for the first time. I'll walk in the front door and take a couple of steps in, you know, get out from in front of the front door and then just listen for a minute and see if I can't, you know, figure out maybe where the front desk is at. You know, you can get a lot of good auditory, you know, clues from that. You might hear a person behind the desk talking to somebody else checking in, or maybe even, you know, the sound of somebody typing on a computer or those kinds of things. Or I might be able to get, you know, the sound of an elevator, you know, dinging, and can get, you know, a good sense of maybe where that elevator might be. Also, again, like Kristen said, just, you know, the size of, you know, maybe the lobby, you know, is it going to be a really big, you know, cavernous lobby of a hotel, or is it going to be kind of a smaller one? So that I'll do that very frequently, when, especially when I walk into a new hotel for the first time. I do that to some extent too, of going into an airport. Again, you know, you can get a lot of, you know, pretty good information if you just, you know, stop for a minute and listen, and, you know, maybe get the sense of where the check-in counter is at, again, by just, you know, the sounds of people asking questions and talking and that kind of stuff, or same with a security checkpoint, you know, get the sound of, you know, people putting bags on that conveyor belt, and that, you know, kind of tick, tick, tick noise of it going all across those rollers and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, definitely, definitely stop and listen can get you a lot of really good information.
I think we can all agree that guide dog users typically travel a little bit faster than people using canes. And so I think sometimes the tendency for guide dog users is you guys are on the go, you're go, 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 which is great. But sometimes just taking a beat and assessing the whole environment by listening can really help you direct your dog a lot better.
You're now unmuted. Your internet connection is unstable.
All right. Chelsea, do you want to set up? We have an interactive portion here. Chelsea, do you want to set it up while I get
yes.
the sound ready?
So we have three sound clips to kind of see what you guys think. So we're gonna play a sound clip and listen and kind of see what you can hear, and then let us know if you were in that environment, where might you be just by listening to the sound clip.
Right, here we go. Clip number one.
Any thoughts? Anybody have a guess as to if you were in that environment, where might you be?
I would say an airport.
Airport or a subway.
Your first guess was correct. And I think somebody put in the chat airport, I believe.
Sorry, I said train station.
Oh, train station. So fair enough. Train station, airports. Definitely could it is airport, but definitely could be either or, because train stations often will make those kinds of announcements about, you know, boarding passes and all that kind of stuff. So fantastic. Yay.
All right. Are you ready for clip number two?
I said go for it.
All right.
Thoughts on that one?
Supermarket.
Very good. And what gave it away? What was the sound clue or clues that led you to believe grocery store?
I could hear the conveyor belt and the little beeping when they pass the groceries through the,
yeah,
you know.
Yep, as they're scanning groceries. Yeah, the beeping. Yep. Fantastic. All right. Very good. And that also not only would indicate, you know, could indicate to you exactly where you're at, but also give you some directional sound clues too, to, you know, actually find that checkout counter. So, all right, third one. Thoughts on that one?
Inside a clothes dryer.
I would say that too. I would also say, like, it sounded like a really large city. Also, again, I don't know what my obsession with trains and buses is, but also trains and buses.
Don't let the bus stop. It sounded like a plane, like being in flight.
This one was definitely a little more difficult. But whoever said something about large city is correct. It's actually a sound clip of New York. So in the middle of, I think it was Manhattan. So the sound of traffic and all that in New York City. So that one was a little more difficult.
To the person who said inside of a clothes dryer, do you have firsthand experience with that?
I refuse a comment on the grounds of my
Did you fair have enough, a really mean enough. Older sibling?
You know, Chelsea, I was thinking when you were talking about the beeping that it seems like when you're leaving, when you're getting off the plane and heading out at security, there's beeping that you can hear. So you can kind of aim towards that way, because usually there's an exit near the security.
The beeping of people, the checking of IDs. Yep. Sometimes you can pick up on that for sure. Most definitely.
Sound can be a huge, huge help for navigation.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And for both cane and guide dog user.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Our next helpful tip is to think broadly. Generalizations of areas often hold true. And this is something that when I was teaching at the VA with my veterans, you know, having them walk into an area, and even if it was someplace they had never been before, saying, okay, tell me what you know about places like grocery stores, pet stores. Think about the layout of things and how, you know, how that generalizes to most places in that category.
So one thing I have found over the years in my travel is, you know, airports are generally have some generalizations and some similarities. There's always exceptions, but especially when you get into the gate area, when you come through security and you're getting into the gate area, stuff is usually pretty linear. You've got gates either up and down one side or up and down both sides, and then between those gates you've got your restaurants and your convenience stores and your restrooms and all that kind of stuff. Again, there's always exceptions. I live here in Dallas, and the DFW Airport Terminal D is one of those exceptions. It's a great big circle, which is oh so much fun to navigate, and hallways that lead off into really weird directions and places. So there's always exceptions, but in general, like I said, especially when you get into the gate area of an airport, you know, stuff is usually pretty linear. Also, just a fun fact that I have found over the last few years, Hyatt Place hotels typically are laid out exactly the same. Sometimes they're mirror images. One in Portland, Maine would be maybe the mirror image of one in Bangor, but they're typically laid out very similarly, which is fantastic for those of us who travel and like some consistency in our hotels. So again, exceptions. I found one in Houston that was not, it was completely different than anyone I had ever stayed in, but quite often they are very similar. And Kao mentions grocery stores and those kinds of things. You know, typically you've got your refrigerated stuff around the perimeter, your refrigerated stuff, your deli, your fresher foods around the perimeter of the store. And then in the middle, you've got your aisles, you know, either going back to front or, you know, left to right, right to left, with your, you know, canned goods and your pastas and all that kind of stuff. So you can make some kind of broad generalizations with things, with the understanding that there's always exceptions.
Yeah. When I would teach Cane Chapel and I would do a grocery store orientation, I would say to my veterans, what's the first thing that you always run into when you're in the grocery store, the very first department? Anybody have a guess?
Produce.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was dairy.
Usually dairies. So actually, that's a good point. So usually it's produce or the bakery, because you think they're doing this to be helpful. Hint, they're not. They're doing it for marketing. The first thing you see when you walk into a grocery store is the fresh, bright produce. It looks good. It smells good. It's healthy for you. It's a great image for the store. Usually the bakery's nearby, right? Smells delicious, all those great carbs. Usually the dairy, Jenny, is usually in the furthest corner from the entrance, because how many times do you go to a store and you're like, oh, I just need a gallon of milk? Well, the store knows this, and the store's like, we're gonna make you walk all the way past everything else to get to the gallon of milk.
I wonder if it's also different where you, depending on where you live as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Individual stores can vary too. But for the most part, you know, it's marketing. It's the stores wanting to make a buck or two. But you can use that generalization, keeping in mind that there's always going to be some individual differences. All right. So the next helpful hint we have is to do some recon. You want to get there ahead of time. If you're going to a conference, if you're going to a college, if you're going somewhere where you know you're going to have to orient yourself to a larger area, try to get the information ahead of time if possible.
So definitely, you know, I have been known in the past to, especially for big summer conventions, NFBs, ACBs, those kinds of things where it's going to be, I know it's going to be a, you know, a vast hotel and lots of people, to maybe go a day early and kind of get, you know, get my bearings a little bit. I know that's not always possible. You know, sometimes it would require maybe an extra hotel night or something like that. So that's not always possible. So another way to do that is poke around online, see if you can find. Quite often those large conferences and conventions will put on their conference or convention page a verbal description of the layout of the hotel. So that can be super helpful. Poking around on an airport's website on occasion will come up with a good description of kind of the layout of the airport and the terminals. Talking to people, like, you know, if you've had a friend that you know of that stayed at this particular hotel a couple of years ago, give them a call and say, hey, you know, do you remember staying at, you know, the Hilton in downtown Atlanta? What do you remember about it? You know, is there any, you know, things you could tell me about it that might, you know, help my orientation and help me orientate. So, you know, using the technology and the internet to see what you can pull up. And then, you know, using friends and family to see if, you know, they might have some previous experience with a particular place or environment that you might be going into. So same with college. You know, if you know you're going to be going to X college in the fall, you know, maybe make a trip or two that summer and wander around campus a little bit and you know, start to get a sense, start making that mental map of that campus in your head so that, you know, when everybody descends on campus, you know, you already have at least a general sense of where things are. So.
Speaking of, you're talking about the hotel description, Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Chelsea and I were recently at the AER Pendel conference in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, just last week. And they had a fantastic description of their hotel that they emailed out to all the participants before the conference. So, you know, it is definitely helpful to be able to get that info ahead of time if you can.
Yeah, for sure. It helped a lot. And I was just recently at a Texas AER conference about a month ago. And not only do they provide a written description of the hotel, but they also provided a tactile map, which was really cool. So.
Better. All right, moving on to our next point. And this is something that as guide dog users, you are all extremely familiar with. Working as a team with your dog. You can use your dog's knowledge of destinations and desire to locate those destinations. You can pattern your pup using some back chaining or even targeting to locate counters, desks, poles, the exhibit areas at conferences, anything that you might feel you'll need to get back to later. Literally harness your dog and use them as a team. You know, back chaining, you want to start out really close to whatever object you're having, maybe put your dog at a sit, tap and praise that counter, that desk, and then incrementally work backwards so that you're heading towards that counter, that desk, and praising your dog every time they go to it. At the Seeing Eye, we have a targeting program with the clicker. We have an external target, so it's just a keychain wrapped in red tape to make it very visible for the dog that has a bell on it so that when that dog's nose hits the bell, you know, hey, my dog has targeted the keychain. And it's got a couple different methods that you can hang it onto door handles. You can use a magnet to stick it maybe on an elevator door frame where the buttons are. It's got some Velcro if all else fails and a wire tie. So different ways of putting it on the object that you want to find. And then we use a process for teaching the dog to locate that when the target has been lifted. Different schools do different things. Some schools use a hand target. I don't know if any of you are from another school where they use a hand target instead. Same process, just you got to be a little bit closer to that object. So using your dog to help you locate those things is definitely great.
I've used targeting, especially in the really large, again, the really large spaces, hotels, typically in the summer for summer conventions. And I'll usually get my dog to target the exhibit table, our exhibit table in the exhibit hall, because we're usually in the exhibit hall, and also to my room in the hotel. Because quite often it's, you know, either a really long hallway with, you know, rooms on both sides or it's a twisty turny, you know, lefts and rights and zigs and zags all over the place. So I've definitely used targeting in the past with several of my dogs to get them to show me those things that I really need to find, like my room, which is really important.
I think one of the coolest examples that I've had one of my graduates use targeting for, she travels probably as frequently as Chelsea, and she is a Delta loyalist. So she actually was able to get her dog to target the Delta priority lane for check-in. And the dog has since generalized anytime he sees the Delta logo on one of those signposts, he'll take her right up to it. So that's a great example of how targeting can be used not only for a specific situation, but she generalized it across airports. So it's very, very fun to watch.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, I was impressed with that. You can also utilize the outside command. A lot of schools will have outside or inside if your dog's familiar with it. Chelsea, I think you used this one last week too, right?
I did, actually. So mentioned that we were at a Pendel conference in Pennsylvania, and the hotel, the lobby of the hotel was this kind of big, vast, cavernous space. And it didn't have a lot of auditory clues or cues to help orientate. And then to make things even more fun and crazy was the whole middle part of this lobby was sunk. It was like a sunken space. So if you went straight from the front door, it took, I don't know, dozen steps, 20 steps or so, you would come to like three or four stairs going down. And then if you kept going across, you'd come to three or four steps going back up, and you'd be on the other side of the lobby. And, but there was, again, no real auditory, you know, clues or cues to kind of help orientate, at least initially, to that space. And so for the first handful of times that I was going anywhere, I would tell my dog outside, and then I knew from the front door that to get to the exhibit hall or to the restaurant, that it was off to my left. And then if I got to that hallway where the exhibit hall, and then that led down to the restaurant, I knew then that if I made another left, that I would go down the hallway where the rest of the meeting rooms for the hotel were. So that actually really helped my orientation, because coming out of that elevator bank of elevators, you really didn't have much of anything, you know, to kind of indicate to you, at least for the first time or two, until I, you know, kind of got my bearings, where things were auditorily. So it helped a lot, actually.
Using that front door as a landmark. And
mm-hmm. Yep. Find it. Yeah, cool. Yep.
So our next point is, just as you are working as a team with your dog, you also want to work as a team with other humans, other people. Make use of area experts or trusted friends and family members. I'm going to put a plug in for O&M instructors, your friendly neighborhood O&M instructor. Feel free to make use of them to help orient to a space. If you're going to school, make use of your campus disability service office. You know, if you're going to a hotel, make use of the hotel employees. Feel free to use them to help you orient to a space. At the Seeing Eye, we will teach our graduates the OCS method, orientation, coaching, and solo. So with orientation, the graduate would go often human guide, and the person they're working with would describe the area, any larger tactile landmarks that they might feel, any auditory landmarks, anything that can help them orient. The coaching, you want to have that person behind your right shoulder so they don't disrupt your dog. And basically their job in that coaching position is just to make sure you're running through the route cleanly. You want to make sure your dog doesn't make a mistake, because dogs remember things, as you all know. And so if you go off sailing down a side alley that you don't want to go, your dog's going to remember that for next time and go, hey, maybe we want to take that trip again. So that coaching part of the OCS method is just to help you guys run through the trip cleanly so that you can pattern your dog to where you want to go. And then, of course, solo is, you know, that person says, hey, I'll, you know, see you later. I'm going to watch from a distance, or watch really closely behind you and just make sure you're good to go. You may or may not need that, depending on how comfortable you feel. Some people do orientation coaching and they're like, hey, I got it. I'm good. See you later. So you can feel free to make use of that method. When you're working with area experts or O&M instructors or anybody else, you always want to ask a lot of questions. And most importantly, you want to confirm your answers. Chelsea, what kind of questions do you normally ask of people?
So first of all, I try to word my questions in a way that I'm not just asking a yes or no question. Because quite often, especially these days, people are, you know, looking at their phone or otherwise disengaged with the environment around them. And if you go up to somebody and say, hey, is the ladies' room off to the left? And without probably even looking up to confirm it, they will probably go, yeah, sure. Uh-huh. So I always try to word my questions to people when I'm, especially when I'm looking for directions in a way that is going to, you know, require them to like look up and confirm. So I might say, can you tell me where the ladies' room is at? And then, you know, that's going to hopefully force them to look up and look around and go, oh yeah, there's a sign that says it's down there to the left. And then I always follow up that with another question and a gesture that says, oh, okay, off to my left. And I will point off to my left. Because especially, and I'm sure most everybody on this call knows this, especially if a person is facing you, a lot of people don't make that flip-flop, you know, when they say, oh yeah, it's off to your left. Quite often they mean to your right, because good people don't, you know, they forget that if you're facing somebody, their left is your right and vice versa. So I always confirm especially when I'm getting directional information that, you know, what I'm being told is correct, so that I don't go sailing off in the wrong direction. So that those would probably be my two biggest helpful tips when, you know, especially engaging the general public on, you know, asking for some direction to a particular place or to locate something. So. And then I'll also, you know, try to get some information about the environment if I can from somebody, you know, especially at like a hotel. You know, if I walk in and say, hey, you know, can you tell me where the front desk is at? And, you know, they might say, oh, you know, it's off to your left. And I might say, okay, is there a, you know, anything to help me indicate that I've gotten to that? Or I'm getting close to that, you know, is there like a big rug in front of it? Or is the, you know, elevators past the big fountain in the middle of the, you know, in front of the lobby? Or any, you know, any big, you know, feature that I can use to help, you know, get some information or to, you know, help fill out that mental map in my head of that particular space. So those are the kinds of things that I'll ask quite often of people. So yeah.
And you mentioned before, Chelsea, just briefly, tactile maps.
Oh yeah. So I will fully admit I'm not always real great with maps. I'm not quite sure why. But the Texas AER, the conference I mentioned earlier, actually gave, when you checked in, they asked if you, you know, had any use for a tactile map. And I was like, yeah, sure. I'll take it. Like I said, I'm not always real great with them. I know some people are really good with them and really love them. I don't know. They sometimes confuse me more than help, but this one was actually really, really well done. It had, you know, things marked really well and very, you know, very different markings for things and that kind of stuff. So that actually really helped a lot, because the hotel that we were in was this huge resort hotel with like a water park attached to it and all kinds of crazy stuff. So it was actually very, very, very helpful. So another thing I forgot to mention too earlier is another, you know, we've talked a lot about sound, Another thing that can also be super, super helpful is, you know, your other senses, your smell can be really helpful as well. You know, the smell of coffee. So letting you know that you're getting close to the coffee area or close to a coffee shop. You know, other places have, as probably most of us know, you know, certain places have certain smells, and, you know, that, you know, like Home Depot has a really specific smell. And so that, you know, that all can help too. So, yeah, but tactile maps can definitely be helpful. Even getting somebody to, you know, use, and obviously with your permission, but, you know, draw kind of a picture on the palm of your hand or even on your back, can also be super helpful. You know, they can say, okay, you know, down here by your thumb is the, you know, entrance to the hotel. If you went straight across to your, you know, pointer finger, you would run right into the, you know, check-in counter. You know, if you were back at the front door and you went, you know, kind of off at a diagonal towards your pinky finger, you know, that's where the elevators are at, and that kind of stuff. That can be of quite a bit of use as well. So, but obviously definitely with your permission to do stuff like that. So.
Sure. And sometimes you got to get creative with what you have around to use a tactile map out of. I've used silverware in a diner to construct a map on the table. I've even used, I'm proud of this one, a poop bag, a clean one, I promise, with some medical tape that I used to make a raised grid system for the streets for a student. So sometimes you just got to grab what you have around you and make a map. The other tip we have for you is to utilize that other mobility tool you have. You know, the one that's probably in the back of a closet somewhere.
Or the one that you, you know, pull out on occasion to get dog toys out from under the bed. That's what mine's used for mostly.
But in all seriousness, the cane can be a really great tool to help you learn all of the tactile clues that might be helpful for you when you're navigating the room with your dog. So you can trail the perimeter of a room with your cane and explore whatever objects might be along that perimeter.
Can be super helpful in, you know, if you are wanting to teach your dog, especially to target something, an object, right? Because dogs are obstacle avoiders. And sometimes we want them to, you know, find those obstacles, right? That chair in that classroom, or, you know, the front desk of the hotel or whatever. Sometimes pulling out the cane, you know, putting your dog, either have your dog with you and have your dog at heel. And then when you find that obstacle that, you know, you want your dog to then, you know, show you to target, you know, and then following whatever, you know, targeting procedure you use to get your dog to, is, can be very helpful. And even just, you know, to have a better sense of, you know, a space for some people can be very helpful as well. So, and some people prefer it, at least initially, to do it completely without your dog. So that's very much personal preference, whether, you know, you do it with your dog at heel and, you know, have them sit and praise or, you know, target the things you want to target. Or whether you know, pull out the cane and go out and check it out first and then bring your dog in. Doesn't matter. It's just whatever works best for you, but definitely pulling out the cane on occasion can be super helpful. More than just pulling out dog toys from under the bed.
Definitely. All right. And our last tip is, last but certainly not least, use technology. There's so much of it out there nowadays. Use it to your advantage, but with a disclaimer. Technology is great when it works. I'm sure you all know. Sometimes it doesn't. So just make sure you're not relying solely on that tech.
Yeah. I use technology quite a bit. GPSs and all that fun stuff. But it has failed a time or two or 10. I use GPS on occasion, and you know, sometimes you may not have a great connection, or you might be, you know, in a bigger city where you've got lots of tall buildings that are blocking the signal, or, oh no, I forgot to charge my phone last night and I have 5% battery left, or whatever the case may be. You know, technology, like Kayla said, technology is amazing. And when it works, it is absolutely a huge help. But it definitely, you know, is not, it shouldn't be your, you know, oh no, my technology failed, now what do I do? You know, hope that some of our tips have, you know, kind of helped you prepare for when that technology does fail. So, and again, another technology thing, I use Aira quite a bit. For those of you who are not familiar with Aira, it's a subscription, fairly similar to Be My Eyes, except Be My Eyes is free, which is amazing. Aira is paid for the most part, although there are free access points all over the country, and there's getting to be more and more of them. But you call up, you get a live person on the other end. And that person, through the camera on your phone or iPad, whichever you choose to use, but something with a camera, can then see what's around you and can help with visual tasks. So they can, you know, read the instructions on a, you know, pizza that you want to cook, or they can direct you through an airport to get to gate, you know, B22. It is quite helpful when it does work, but on occasion you may call up an Aira agent and it might ring and ring and ring, and you may not get somebody. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen on occasion. So.
And another point with, especially with Aira, but with any kind of technology, you really need to be comfortable, number one, using that technology, but also number two, working with your dog. And you need to be comfortable with those two things separately before you combine them. You know, we see a lot of
absolutely,
yeah, who want to do both at once, and that's great. But when you're learning to use a new dog, or when you're first learning a new environment and you bring technology on top of it, sometimes you pay attention only to that technology, but you're not paying attention to your dog pulling you around a light post, or that traffic that's telling you, hey, the light's not in your favor. So making sure you're familiar with the technology and your dog before you put the two together is crucial.
Absolutely. So.
All right, so Chelsea, should we just quick summarize all of our simple tips here to end our session?
Yes.
Right. So number one, stop and listen.
See, here's a technology thing. Technology is great when it works.
Did you plan that?
No, I did not. You gotta love fate.
Oh, man. You want me to run down the list real quick?
Yes, please.
Okay. Stop and listen. Think broadly. Think of generalizations. Do some recon, get there early, or get information ahead of time. Work as a team with your dog. Use patterning, use back chaining, use targeting. Work as a team with other people, O&Ms, area experts, friends, family. Use your cane if necessary. Get more tactile info that way. And utilize technology as necessary and as available. So those are our basic helpful hints that I'm sure you guys are all utilizing already, but we'd love to hear if you have any other thoughts or any other things to add to our list.
Or any questions?
Anybody have any great technology out there that they're using? It changes so rapidly, it's hard to keep up with.
It is hard to keep up with.
This is Carol. I would just like to say this has been most helpful. I don't have a guide dog, but all of what you said was just right on, even no matter what, with a little pupper or not. So thanks. Really helpful.
Yay! Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. Yeah, I echoed. Oh, sorry.
Oh, you're good. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I echo everything that you guys said. I just got my first dog, a year ago, and I found like a lot of the stuff now I'm doing, but I don't have to think about it. But in the beginning, like I'd have to be like, okay, what are the things that I learned? Now I found like when you guys were going through them that, oh yeah, I'm already doing these things just without thinking about them. So it's really nice to have that recap.
Awesome.
Glad to hear that, Jenny. I can't believe it's been a year already too. That's crazy.
I like it, but it's also time's going by too fast.
Time flies when you're having fun and working dogs.
Well, fantastic.
This is Ginger. I had a comment about, I forget what number it was, but it was about
You're not allowed.
No, this is a good one. It's about human assistance. And I had a question because I remember when I was on campus in Arizona, I learned all the walkways and all the roads, names and everything. And then I would stop somebody and ask them for help and say, where is X path or this? And they would have no idea because people don't seem to know the names of the roads and stuff. And I don't know if that was just in Arizona, but I had to learn the different sighted landmarks. Like I had to say where the blue building is or where the library is. Have you experienced that?
Yes. No, that's not just an Arizona thing. And that's a really good thing to point out. Thank you. That is not uncommon at all. To go to somebody and say, hey, you know what is, you know, can you tell me is this Second Street or whatever? And quite often you'll get people that'll go, oh, I have no idea. Because sighted people quite often orientate more on landmarks, visual landmarks, than they do on, you know, street names and all that kind of stuff. So not only getting to learn, you know, the names of streets and where sidewalks go and names of buildings, you know, when you're on a college campus, names of buildings and all that kind of stuff can be really, really helpful. Getting some visual landmarks of stuff too can also be super helpful. I know on my college campus, I think it was the business? It's been so long since I've been in school. I think it was the business where like the, you know, all the business administration and all that kind of stuff was at, classes were. It was called, you know, the business admin building, blah, 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 somebody's name. But it was this funky looking building. It looked like a radiator, like on the front of a car. It was weird. And so if you would ask somebody, hey, you know, can you tell me where the business, you know, business administration, blah, 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 whatever, whoever's name it was named after. Can you tell me where that building is at? They'd look at you like you were crazy. But if you said, oh, can you tell me where that building that looks like a radiator is at? They could, you know, tell you exactly where it was. So especially for those places that, you know, you're going to like your area around your neighborhood or your college campus or the places that you're going to be frequently, learning some of those visual landmarks can be super helpful when you know, engaging the general public in, you know, directions and such. So thank you, Ginger, for bringing that up.
And Ginger, I always say that I think everybody, all school kids, should get a little dose of O&M. Regardless of their visual status, just because I feel like everybody needs to learn these things. And, you know, maybe that would help people learn street names.
Yes.
Chelsea and KO, this is Jim. We probably have time for one more question and then we'll let you go. Any last question from anyone? All right, no last question. Chelsea, Kristen, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening and spending it with us. I think we all got a lot of very valuable information. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And this is Pauline Lamotang. Thank you very, very much, Chelsea and Kristen.
Thank you.
Very
informative.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a blast.
Thank you.
And it was very nice to hear some voices I haven't heard in quite a number of years. So everybody, thank you.
Well, and if you have a chance and come to Maine, let us know.
Oh, soon. I miss Maine.